Hey everyone, Kwame here. And before we get to the main show, I've got two lovely ladies joining me and they are going to share something very special with you. Ladies, thanks for joining in. Please introduce yourselves.
So my name is Ariel and I'm here with Daniela and we're from the Lung Health Foundation. Today we wanted to talk about the My Lung Life Hockey Challenge that has been running since Canada Day.
Awesome. Daniela, nice to meet you as well. Can you tell us a little bit about what My Lung Life Hockey Challenge is?
Yeah, so we actually started the My Lung Life Hockey Challenge right at the beginning of all this quarantine madness as a way to make sure that we're still connecting with Canadians and Canadians are really thinking about their lungs more than ever. So we started the My Lung Life Hockey Challenge after a few of us were, you know, out in our neighborhoods and noticing that our neighbors and their families are still playing hockey despite not being able to get on the ice or the rink. Wherever it is, they were still doing it in their driveways and on their roads. And so we decided to create this challenge for anybody who wanted to keep playing hockey throughout quarantine and also wanted to give back a bit to an important cause.
It sounds like a great idea. Ariella, any notable hockey personalities involved in this challenge?
We have our famous hockey dad, Walter Gretzky, that is a part of this challenge and is challenging all Canadians to get active and on their driveway. His family has been a part of the Lung Health Foundation for years, and it was really important to make sure that he was a part of our first physically distanced peer-to-peer fundraiser.
Sweet. Great guy. Met him once. He's actually a pretty funny guy. He's he's a great people person, obviously father of the greatest hockey player in the world, Wayne Gretzky. So how can people get involved and what is expected of them?
Okay, so the first thing is we are hosting our My Lung Life Hockey Challenge on mylunglife.ca. It's a platform where you could upload your fundraiser and your connection to hockey and raise funds for lung cancer, asthma, COPD, and research that really affects the 1 in 5 Canadians that are living with lung disease. So what we're asking is that people get into their driveways if they're hockey players and shoot some goals. Mm-hmm. If you're not a hockey player like myself and you are a new fan, I am training like a hockey player. Okay. And you also be your own MVP and create your own challenge and ask your friends to donate to your cause right on mylunglife.ca.
So, Daniela, there are a lot of fundraisers, things out there. And I'll tell you personally, I'm a very skeptical person because, you know, I feel like, you know, you donate, you do not know where that money's going. For the audience, give them some sense of security on where the funds are going.
Yeah, it's a good topic. And I mean, everybody's got questions and everybody's a skeptic, especially nowadays. For us, I mean, we're constantly investing in groundbreaking research. Like it blows my mind how underfunded lung health research really is. And lungs are some of the things that all beings have in common. So it's crazy that we don't emphasize the importance of it. So we're constantly investing in Canada-wide research programs. But we're also investing in support programs and services that are needed immediately for the patients and their caregivers, whether that's, you know, their family members. It could be parents of young kids with asthma. It could be adult children of parents living with COPD or lung cancer, right? So these programs really are helping to ensure that nobody faces lung disease alone, because like Ariel said, there's 1 in 5 Canadians that are living right now with a lung disease.
Mm-hmm. And it's so important now with COVID-19 also, because the COVID-19 really attacks the lungs. Yeah. So we want to make sure that our lung health is up to par. Deadline to the participants out there that want to get involved?
So we are wrapping up next week, but as Daniela mentioned, there's always ways to be involved and connect with us and support. One of my favorite services is our Lung Health Line. You could directly connect with a respiratory educator that could speak you through things like COVID-19 or any other lung disease.
All right, so the push is on right now. So we got to make sure everybody gets involved. Website, Twitter, social media handles. Can you give everybody that information so that they can get on top of it as soon as possible?
Yeah, so you could visit us at www.mylunglife.ca or find us on Facebook, the Lung Health Foundation.
Awesome. And is there anything else we can let everybody know about the My Lung Life Hockey Challenge before I let you ladies go?
We are so close to hitting 100 participants for this challenge, which is way more than we ever expected for our first year of running this. If you don't catch us this year, as Ariel said, there's always ways to participate and get involved and give back, but you will be able to see us again next year for sure.
And Ariel, I'll give you the last word.
Exercise is one of the best ways we can invest in our health. Yeah. And I am a new fan of hockey. I think that hockey fans are really important to who we are as a culture and community. Learning about it through this challenge was exciting. And I'm excited to make impact through the Lung Health Foundation by shooting some great goals.
Have you been watching the return to play, the playoffs? Right now,
yes.
Ladies.
Okay. I haven't watched as much of the games, but I'm interested in the conversations. Knowing okay. that Toronto is a hub city.
Yes.
And Daniela and her.
Here we go. Here we go. With the Montreal Canadiens bucket. Okay,
I'm a
Habs
girl. We're a Hub family.
Okay.
I'll always root for the home team.
Because our teams are not in, do you guys have any predictions? Do you guys have any favorites for the playoffs right now? We're coming down to the final four.
I mean, if it's not going to be my team, I'll go for the Bruins.
Bruins are out. So Danielle,
well, then I know nothing, don't I?
It is all good. It's going to be great. It's going to be exciting. But I think what's more exciting is My Lung Life Hockey Challenge. Danielle, Ariella, thank you very much for joining us. And once again, I think this is something very important. I'm really glad that you ladies are taking the initiative to help Canadians become healthier Canadians. So I really appreciate your time.
Thank you so appreciate much.
That. You're welcome. Have a good day.
Let the boys know we said hello.
I will, for sure.
Okay. Bye now.
Bye.
My Lung Life Hockey Challenge. Interesting. I think you guys should really check it out. And I hope that you will lend your support. And speaking of support, let's start the show.
Nice. Soul on ice. I'ma put my soul on ice. Nice.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, or good night, whenever or wherever you are listening to us. Thank you for joining the show. My name is Kwame. And do remember to make sure you rate, review, subscribe, all that good stuff. Big shout outs to the Fountain of Graphic Information, Brother B, always holding us down on social media. So if you haven't done already, do us a favor, hit us up on all social media platforms. Soul on Ice, the podcast, that's what it is. Coming up in the show, we've got Cabrel Richards, aka Cabby, joining us. For those who don't know Cabby is a mainstay in Canadian broadcast history, I will say. He is a great guy, and he has moved on to Las Vegas to work for Bleacher Report. So for all the Canadian listeners out there, you're going to love this one. For all the international listeners out there, if you haven't had a chance to look him up, man, you'll see some great content. But first, before we get to that, Double Trouble is in the house. Elijah Roberts and Akil Thomas. Boys, what's the business?
How much? What are you saying, Kwamster?
I'm here, baby, just trying to hold it down.
Akil Thomas reporting live from Grand Junction, Colorado. I'm on my way to LA, stopped to see my dad in Fort Wayne for 2 days there, and then I'm on my way to LA. So it's been fun. I'm riding with my little bro. It's I think it's a 39-hour drive from where I was in Fort Wayne. So it's definitely long, but it's fun with my little bro, and kind of adventurous day today. We were driving as soon as we got into Colorado. I posted on my Snap story, but the sun just went away. It was just weird. It looked like there was going to be a tornado, and the sky was pink, like a dark pink, like a weird pink. I felt like I was in a movie.
Aching, you taking pictures?
I took videos and stuff because it was actually something. Like I felt like I was on Mars. Like it did. Huh. It was not Earth. I was not on Earth today. It was crazy. But yeah.
Call me. What did I say? The real reason the kill wasn't on the episode for?
Yeah, he ducked out on us. You ducked out on us. Well, I thought you were. Yeah. I think the audience needs an explanation And while Keel Thomas was not on the show last week,
because he knows him better than him at NHL.
Simple. At NHL, right? He didn't want to get called out on the business.
Well, first of all, Elijah hasn't played me in, I think, over a year now, because I've taken over $100 from him. And Sunday I had my grandma's birthday, and then on Monday went to saw my billets for my last time. So I just had a bunch of stuff to kind of do to prepare, because I was pretty just congested with everything.
Congested, is that the word for it, Elijah? Congested?
Well, I made it the word, so it is. So.
Don't think it's a word, but we'll go with it.
It is, but it is a word. I made it the word, so yeah.
Elijah, what's been going on with you, man? You're looking like a big man right now, doing big man business. Fill everybody in.
Yeah, I just moved downtown, Young and Dundas, so I'm right down there. I've been busy this whole week with my roommate, Kyle Bowlers, kind of moving stuff in and getting the Wi-Fi set up, doing grocery shopping, just doing adult things. So we're finally settled in, start class and practices this week. So got a lot going on, but excited to finally get going.
In-person classes or?
Nope, all online.
Online.
Yeah.
Jeez.
How long, have they given you a kind of a schedule for that? Is that what it's going to be like for the whole year? Is that going to be up until 2021? What's the haps on those snaps?
They haven't announced it yet, but I know first semester is full online, and then it's looking like second semester too. And then I got my schedule for all the first semester already. So I got classes Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday.
What about the team? Have you guys done anything yet? Or have you guys figured out your schedule as far as practice goes?
Yeah, they've had us on a workout program all summer, and Monday, Wednesday, Friday.
Hold on a second. Stop. Keel is laughing. I don't know
why he's laughing.
Why, Keel Thomas, please inform the audience why you are laughing.
I can honestly say that I could probably count on my hands that God gave me how many times Elijah worked out this
summer. Are we talking about both hands or just one hand?
I would give them both, but still, you know.
Now, Elijah, would you like to retort?
Here's the thing there. I don't post my workouts on my stories on Instagram every time I work out or every time I run 100 meters.
Hold on a second. So, hold on a second right there. Are you saying that Akil Thomas does that?
He does. Okay. I don't need the cameras. I just work behind the cameras.
So one question. You usually go to BTNL. So what gym did you go to this summer?
I worked out from home. Bought weights. I bought those big ropes. I bought everything. Did workouts from home.
So does your coach, like, I don't know, you've talked to him, like, are you a centerman or are you a forward? Like, what, like, does he know? Like,
when I talked before, I was going in as a center, but I mean, forward, wherever I want to play, right? So,
like, this practice, are you going to have a forward jersey or like?
Well, not the whole, like, the guys from like out west and like wherever, they aren't coming down until November. Okay. So it's kind of just local guys. So I don't think it'll be like, and lines and systems and all, just kind of be more flow and skill practices.
How are you feeling about the transition? Are you regretting wanting to play forward? Are you still good to go?
Nope. No regrets. I'm ready to go. That's kind of just how I live my life. I don't really regret anything.
Akil,
except
anything?
Playing me in NHL, right?
Say that one more time.
Except playing me in NHL.
Once you settle into LA, get your Wi-Fi going, we're going to get a live game going for everybody.
I fund Zale with the amount of money I've won off Elijah in NHL.
You're saying that Zale Apparel has been funded through playing
Elijah Shelton Roberts from playing NHL.
Wow.
Kwame. That's why he doesn't play
me. Action speaks louder than words. So when his Wi-Fi is set up, we will get the game going.
Are we talking 21?
I'll stream it.
20. Soon as his Wi-Fi is set up.
I think October 16th, 21 is coming out. I think we should wait till it comes out. And I think we should have a best of five tournament between the two of you.
Streamed
the whole time.
Streamed the whole time. We'll put it up everywhere so everybody can see it. Winner take all the bragging rights. And you know, we just go from there because it's a lot of talking between the two of you. A lot of talking.
Well, I got a story, actually. One time, Akil had the Ice Dogs Instagram for the day. Mm-hmm. And usually after morning club, we go to my house or his house and just play like NHL or chill. And we played a game and he was keeping the score the whole game. And then I beat him and he lied on the Instagram story, said that he won.
Whoa.
So it will have to be streamed. So there's none of that going on.
Whoa.
I'm not going to lie. Mm-hmm. I did do that. I admit it. I regret it. It won't happen again.
So is this time we're going to be up and up, no cheating, Akil?
No cheating.
Correct. It's going to be streamed. I can't wait. Let's do it.
Big shout out to Matt Dumba for winning the King Clancy Award. Akil, what are your thoughts on this accomplishment for Mr. Dumba?
Yeah, just so everyone who doesn't know what it is, the King Clancy Memorial Trophy is a sports award given annually to the National Hockey League's player who best exemplifies leadership qualities on and off the ice, who has made a significant humanitarian contribution to his community. So, that was awesome. I'm really happy for him. And the first kind of thought that came up to me was, you know, he's making I wouldn't say he's paving the way, but he's making guys who are of color and who are younger, who are coming up to the league, feel like way more comfortable. And it makes me, you know, feel, you know, more comfortable to kind of speak out about stuff and to stand up for my people, stand up for everything that's going on. So he's obviously been the biggest advocate, I think, in the NHL right now for this stuff going on in North America this year. And, you know, kudos to him. It's awesome.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would say that I don't think he's the biggest advocate. There's a lot of guys that have been really lending their voice, you know, Vander Kane, Joe Ward, Wayne Simmons. There's a lot of guys doing it. And I think that speech that Matt Dumba had during the beginnings of the restart of the playoffs or return to play had a really huge impact around the hockey world. So it's great. And I think, you know, I hope he does set an example for some of you young guys to be able to use your voices and use your platform to affect change and to normalize minority faces and voices in the game of hockey. And with that being said, we are going to bring on a guy who, like I said, had his foot stamp all over Canadian broadcasting, and he's going to tackle the United States. His name is Cabrel Richards, a.k.a. Cabby, and he's coming up in just a few seconds right here on Soul on Ice, the podcast. All right, let's get busy. I got to start it off a little bit like this. You know, people come in and out of your life, but, you know, there's just some of those people that will make a mark, and that mark will stand the test of time. People that you know that will have your back anytime you ask them. And this young man that's about to join us, he is just that type of dude. I've known him ever since the early 2000s when he first appeared on Sportsnet TV in Toronto. He's interviewed all the greats in sports entertainment and in entertainment itself. When he walks a room, he's got this thing, it's called star power, but without the ego. He's a staple of Canadian sports TV for over 10 years, and then he was gone. He's here to tell us why he's taking his talents to Las Vegas. He's also here to share his highlights as a sports broadcaster. Let me introduce to you Cabrel Richards, a.k.a. Mr. Microphone, a.k.a. Mr. In Your Face, a.k.a. Cabby. What's going on, my dude?
I'm wonderful. That is a fantastic introduction. I'm not sure how – it's maybe like 71% accurate, but I appreciate the embellishment nonetheless.
Which one did you think was a little off? Which one did you think?
The star power? The stardom thing, like walking into a room, like that part is – I mean – listen, the people that I interview when they walk into rooms, mm-hmm. those people are stars. Those people can affect the temperature in a room. I take up space and air and food. That's what I do.
Cabby, you and I we've partied.
We have.
We've been in so many of different scenarios, bro.
In fact, I think I flew to one of your parties just because you were having a party.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did. Yes, you did. In Alberta.
That's correct.
Yes,
yeah.
You did. Yes, you did.
I got on a plane because you were having a party.
So when you come in to these places that I have been, everybody used to turn and be like, yo, that's Cabbie. There's Cabbie. And the one thing about you, my man, is you never, I've never seen you use that to your advantage. I've never seen you be that guy who never wanted to take a picture, sign an autograph, have a conversation.
We don't live in that world. Like, we're just not, we're just blue collar dudes, man. You know, we're just dream chasers like Elijah and like Akil. Like, we're all dream chasers. Yeah. We're all trying to be better versions of what our parents want us to be. So, you know, it's just kind of humbly, you know, put in the work, and hopefully with some luck and preparation, great things will happen. So that's really the explanation for that. There's no other reason, my dude. Also, none of us are Bieber or Drake, or even before that, you know, an Avril Lavigne or a Celine Dion or Jim Carrey. Like, we're not megastars. We're just like working stiffs. So,
yeah,
you know, if the four of us were those four people, then maybe we'd be having a different conversation.
Just to circle back, I think Elijah and I were probably busy that night. You guys partied, right? It's probably why we didn't.
You guys were like,
you guys were your diapers when we were partying. Seriously. You know, the first time I saw you was on NBA XL.
Thank you.
And to be honest, I said when I watched you on TV, because I know Nam. For those who don't know Nam again, you're going to have to look her up. I don't got no time to explain who she is. Great, great, great broadcaster in Canadian history of broadcasting. But when I saw you, I was like, yo, this kid right here reminds me of me. Because I did a show called Fat TV back in the mid-90s.
On Channel 4, on Rogers, I guess, or Omni.
That's right.
Whatever it was. Yeah, that's right.
CFMT.
Those are just so music. I mean, you're a music guy. Like, that just, your DNA is music.
Yeah.
And you'd be like interviewing artists and going to events. And I remember Fat TV. That's right. Yeah. That does predate my stuff. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So when I say that you reminded me of me, I didn't mean it as in, oh, look at this young guy. He's falling in my footsteps. It was more of the energy that you brought on camera. It said to me, okay, I know this guy in his head says, I want to be different than everybody else. I want to do something that stands out so that when everybody sees me, they can tell that this is me and this is my style. And that was the mindset I had when I started doing television. I was like, I just got to be different, whatever that is. And I got to bring as much energy as possible. So with that being said, I need you to talk about your introduction to Canadian broadcasting. What's your broadcasting origin story?
Fair. But okay, before we get to that, it should be noted that you were a whole lot cooler than I was, Kwan. Like, I went to high school in a small town called Cambridge, Ontario, which is an hour west of Toronto. So I didn't have access to parties and like celebrities and people in music and stuff like that, like you did. Like, I remember seeing your show. It was either on Friday nights or Saturday. It was on the week, but it just seemed like a distant world from me living in Cambridge and working at Wendy's for $4.55 an hour, saving up to buy a pair of Jordans. So when I was in high school, I used to just rip off Will Smith, Martin Lawrence, and Jim Carrey jokes. Mm-hmm. Like, I would just literally spit their dialogue verbatim. And I would, you know, we would shoot little videos at school and like assemblies. And when my parents would go away for the summers, we would make home videos. And then we would just be ripping off In Living Color and all that kind of stuff. So those are the people on television that informed me. Mm-hmm. And then I think subconsciously I would take in what Ahmad Rashad was doing on NBA Inside Stuff, which was a weekly magazine show on Saturdays on NBC. He had multiple co-hosts. There was Will Obey. There was Summer Sanders, I think. The show was probably ran for like, I don't know, 15 years. Mm-hmm. And Ahmad Rashad was best friends of Michael Jordan. Like, Michael Jordan, at the time, okay, unfortunately, Bill Cosby and O.J. Simpson were like in his wedding party. He had these luminaries in like sports and entertainment or in his wedding party. And he was a former athlete himself, played for the Minnesota Vikings. Mm-hmm. So I didn't, like, you were already on TV by the time I got to Ryerson and I was taking radio and television. And then when I was there, I hooked up with a crew of dudes, and we called ourselves the Hard Eight, and we just continued making movie trailers and stupid videos. And that was like, that was part of the preparation, which would inform me to, like, when I started doing these streeter segments, when I was out on the street harassing random Canadians. Elijah, if you were at Ryerson at the time that I was, I would have been bugging you all the time. And Akil, I probably would have showed up to one of your high school hockey games looking, you know, asking you about what you ate before the game, or like whose equipment was the smelliest. Like, I would just have really stupid questions like that. And that's, that was kind of how I started with this streeter segment at the Score back in, the first one was 2001. So that's how long I've been in the game.
Was RT a part of the eight?
Yeah, RT was a part of the Hard Eight. Yeah, we were roommates at school. We met in our like very first day of, you know, September the 6th, let's say. We had American literature, and RT was late to our first day of university. Jesus. And RT and I were the only black, like, men, like, boys in like, in radio and television. So I just see this dude. I'm like, I can't believe this guy's late on the first day of school.
Yeah.
Like, this guy already is perpetuating the stereotype that we're never on time on the first day of school. Anyway, we became fast friends.
Tell everybody who RT is, for those who don't know.
Okay, so RT is Randall Thorne. He's a music video director. He's a television creator. He just wrote and created a show that was on Hulu called Utopia Falls. It was also on CBC Gem. He's working on a show right now with the CBC. A little nugget about RT was Drake's Hotline Bling video was filmed over 2 days. So Director X, who is also known as Julian Lutz, he shot the first day of Drake's Hotline Bling. So that was all the Drake's performance with the women in the video. Now the second day, X for some reason did not come to set. So RT had to direct Drake in Hotline Bling. So when Drake was talking about RT, well, talking to him about how, I mean, he could tell the story better, about how he was going to perform, RT was like, all right, well, just, you know, just give me a little bit more of that. And Drake was like, well, I was drinking yesterday, so maybe I'll just continue drinking. So he did. And then all those memes that were ubiquitous for that whole year, I think it was 2015 or 16, whenever the video, like him doing, you know, they add like tennis rackets. Drake is like the most memeable figure in entertainment. And I think he is so self-aware that he does these things intentionally. Like, you know, the most recent video with Lil Durk, you know, it's like, it's coming, you know, he's appearing from behind some Nike shoeboxes. Mm-hmm. You know, he's crying in the one shot, or he's just like, he's in the car. He just looks back to the camera. Like, he's just so aware of, or just laughing with Odell Beckham Jr. Anyway, my point is that's our team. Okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyway, yeah, Hard Eight was a crew at school, and I don't think any of them were any in any of my stupid Cabby on the Street segments, but they were certainly formative for how I went on and acted in front of the camera.
Nice.
You talked about Ryerson a little bit as we were kind of talking about earlier. I'm going there, real excited about it. I actually start classes this week.
You sound excited,
and I'm sure. From when you went to when I'm going, time was a lot different.
Yes.
And I just kind of want to know all about your experience and what to kind of expect.
See, the interesting thing is, like, Ryerson is in downtown Toronto. So it's not a party school. It's not like what the University of Western Ontario or Queen's University in Kingston. It's like, it's downtown. So when I went there wasn't that much school culture. It was like everybody took the TTC to go to campus. Very few people lived on campus. And then they left when they had to go home. I fortunately was in radio and TV. So I wanted to be at school because we had access to a bunch of equipment because our school got a lot of money. Our school, I believe at the time, would get $1 million from Rogers and $1 million from CTV. And it would pay for the equipment and some of the staff. It was just like the program was very well funded. What I did enjoy, like, I mean, you're going to be playing hockey, so you probably won't have that much free time, but the free time that we had, there would be like runs in the gym, like those intramural runs. And then, so like the gym, like the athletic center is probably where everybody is at various times. You go in there, I mean, you're a young man, you're probably just going to be doing beach muscle. So just pure bicep curls, tricep extensions, you know, the pull downs, just upper body things is probably what you're going to, you know, hammer curls, the occasional lunge, but you're a hockey player. So you got to do explosive drills, ladder drills, you know, you got to do, you know, lunges, all kinds of stuff. But here's one thing. When I was a kid, my mom told me a story that my parents met at Robards Library at the University of Toronto. That's where she said they met. So when I went to school, I was like, all right, the library, like I'm going to, you know, there're going to be some girls there. Mm-hmm. And then when I went to like finish assignments, no, like you don't even get eye contact, bro. Like everybody there is with like blinders on there. If they have 45, you know, 48 hours to finish an assignment, no one's there to socialize or any of those kind of things. People are there to work. So don't go to the library thinking that you might meet like some new friends.
He's not allowed to anyway, so.
Don't try and get me in trouble here. This story isn't even for you. It's for whoever's watching this or listening to this. The library is not where you're going to go meet new friends.
Yeah, and Ryerson's a lot different now than back in the days. Looks different. I don't know the last time you've been in Toronto to just walk around
Young Street. It's been a few years.
Yeah, it's so different, you know. But I hope
that helped you, Elijah. I'm not.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah. I did.
You made your mark with the show Cabby on the Streets. For those who don't know, you should look it up on YouTube. I would love to hear the pitch meeting on the show and how you got them to bite, because Canadian television, you know, especially a show like that and Canadian television being so different, you know, Canadians love to play it safe, but your show didn't play it safe and you were a young black man. So how did that pitch meeting go?
There wasn't really a formal one. I got to give credit to Lisa Bowes and Steve Coolius, who were the weekend anchors at the Score. And at the time I was writing scripts. So I would write, you know, the highlights. It would, you know, be, you know, the New York Islanders versus the Philadelphia Flyers, you know, third period, point shot, James Van Riemsdyk tips it in, 2-0 Flyers after two periods. Like I'd write that stuff. And then they would add their flourishes. And Tim McAuliffe and Sid Sixero were great at it. And we all started at the same time, but those guys made it got on the air before I did.
Right.
And which was awesome because we were all very supportive of each other. So Lisa and Steve were like, we're hosting the weekend show. We want to change it. We want to add a man on the street segment. So they approached me about it. And I was like, I don't know. At the time I was trying to be an actor. I was trying to be like the Canadian Will Smith, but I have like 1% of Will Smith's talent. So that career didn't go very far. I was in like a handful of commercials. Usually the commercials were us eating food.
And so you do some TV. You've done some TV.
A little bit, but I think because like Rick Mercer had a segment on, I don't know if he was on Air Farce or This Hour Has 22 Minutes. It was one of those sketch comedy shows, but it was a segment called Talking to Americans where he would go to these border cities. Right. And he would ask Americans about Canadians, trivia, and the humor it was in how little Americans knew about Canadians. So that was like the popular Streeter segment at the time. And I don't think my boss really watched a lot of BET, but on BET, there was a guy named Al Shearer, and he did a segment called Hits from the Streets. I think that informed me a little bit more. He would go to HBCUs, historically black colleges, and he would interview random people. He used to make fun of people a lot, and that wasn't really my style. I prefer to make fun of myself just because it was a little bit easier of an interaction with a stranger. I don't want to just ask a stranger for the 3 minutes and then start making fun of their kicks or their hairstyle. Like that just wasn't in my comedic sensibilities. So I told the boss, I'm like, hey, I want a Streeter segment. What do you think? He's like, okay, go shoot one and let me see what it looks like. So I went and I shot a bit about Toronto losing the Olympic bid for 2008, but we shot it in 2001. Right. It was okay. So he said, do another. So I showed it to him. He's like, do another one. So I did another one about the national anthem being played. I mean, 15 years later, the national anthem being played before sporting events was a thing. But in 2001, I was asking people, do you feel like it should be played before sporting events? Half of the people said no. Half the other people said, sure. So then at the end, I got people to sing O Canada. And I cut it together where, you know, one person was singing one line, blah, 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 blah. And I was also mixed into this montage of people singing O Canada. And in my clip, I was singing to a baby in a stroller, and then the baby started to cry. So then when my boss saw that clip, he's like, this is funny. I'm like, well, can we start to air them? And he said, yeah. So Sunday nights was when this segment called Cabby in the Street started airing on The Score. And then random people were sending emails when people would send email, like feedback via email, long before social media. And that's where it started in its infancy. And it was free. Like,
right.
You know, Rick Mercer got a certain salary from the CBC. I was like a part-time script writer, but working for free for 6 months. And then I started to get, you know, a few bucks. I think it was $100 for every episode. And this was back in 2001. So that's how it started.
That's great. Well, you know, whenever I used to see you on TV, you know, I would get super excited just because you're always so funny and you'd make your guests laugh a lot. And like, I guess that's just not something you see all the time. So what about your upbringing allowed you to be this way?
That's a great question. My parents are from the Caribbean and my dad's kind of gregarious. I guess my mom is a little bit, my mom's real conservative. I mean, you guys probably had some, if you have parents from the Caribbean, they're either like super protective or super religious or some combination. Whereabouts are they from? What's that?
Whereabouts in the Caribbean?
My dad's from Jamaica and my mom's from Trinidad. Okay. So, my dad's love of music, I guess, maybe informed me, but I was kind of like on my own because I'm like a 5 or 6 years older than my younger brother. So I was, even though I was the oldest in the house, I was kind of just on my own on my bike, and I would be, had a lot of friends. So I was always out on these adventures, going to some person's place to play video games or another person's place to like, all right, let's go to this ravine and look for salamanders. Or like, I was always up to something. So I think that my sense of adventure came from being so young. And I was always comfortable with a lot of people because I was like seeking attention at all times when I was at school or otherwise. Just a very loud and obnoxious kid, which did not change in my adolescence and definitely has not changed with me as an adult. So Akil, when you saw those interviews where athletes are laughing, that was always the goal, was to try to get them to laugh either by saying, either behaving uncomfortably or awkwardly by, you know, so one thing is like, I would disarm them by, you know, touching, like putting my arms around, long hugs, head on chest, head on face, nose to ear, where you can just feel the heat of another human, like a grown human.
Or you do that on purpose?
Yeah, that was all intentional. But that's how I am though, just as an obnoxious person. But no one ever touches athletes. At the most, you get a handshake or a dap, but you're not going to have a guy acting like a super fan,
right?
Holding, you know, a 6'8" basketball, but, you know, putting my eye socket against his collarbone.
Yeah.
Or, you know what I mean? Or like if it's a hockey dude or a baseball player that's like 5'10" or 6 feet tall, asking a question where my nose is like caressing the hair on their beard.
Yeah.
And Mike Commodore. So this is your times. This is around your times, Kwame. So when you were in Edmonton during the 06 final, when the Oilers went on the run 7 games versus Carolina, I remember interviewing Mike Commodore and putting my face in his red beard. And just, people just didn't do those kind of things. No. And certainly not a chubby black dude in a hockey dressing room. I was just like one of one.
Yeah.
And, you know, if I wasn't in, you know, the Oilers dressing room where there's George LaRocque, or Calgary's where there's Jerome Iginla, or maybe the Rangers at this, or like when Kevin Weeks, I think it was with the Rangers around 06, then I was the only face that looked like mine in there. So I at times I performed a little bit more because I was the only one. And there's such a short, small window of time to interview these guys. There's like 3 minutes. So I got to get in, get my clips and get out and keep it moving. So I didn't really care what other people thought of me because there were a lot of disapproving looks and a lot of hostility, but I didn't care. I just wanted to entertain the audience and hopefully they were entertained by some of my antics.
You think about it and like, you know, I watched the Sidney Crosby video. It's like, that's, you know, you're the only person that can make Sidney Crosby laugh like on camera. So,
Thanks, man.
I find it pretty special. I like the
whole thing. Thanks, man. Thank you. Sid was a tough one to crack, but I eventually got him to crack, and I got a shout out, Steve Ludzig, who was once a coach of the Tampa Bay Lightning. I don't know if he was quite a GM, but he gave me this idea once. One of the funniest ones I've ever done, which is how do you tape your knob? and asking hockey players how they tape their stick with the obvious innuendo about, you know, their manhood. And then, so once guys like clued in like halfway through, I was like, do you have a big knob or a small knob? Then it's like that moment where they catch on to the innuendo is just like, it's a great moment. And some guys had like so much fun with it. And Sid, he said, because it's not small, but it's not huge. I'm like, well, and I said, well, you work with what you got. He goes, yeah. And then he started laughing. And Akil, to your point, very few people hear him laugh in interviews because he's such a serious guy. And I made a point of trying to crack him. And Connor is the same way. Connor's almost a little bit harder to make laugh. And I haven't made him have a belly laugh yet, but I'm working on it.
Elijah and I actually both know Steve Ledzik.
You do? Okay.
Yeah, his son coached us, yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. So shout out to Steve Ledzik. I hope he's doing okay. I haven't seen him in quite a while, so hope he's doing okay.
Yeah. Just going over like your personality there and how much fun you are and making guys laugh. And with doing Cabbie on the Street, it probably really allowed you to kind of do things that you wouldn't be able to do broadcasting TSN or something like that. How much fun did you have with the show, having that kind of a leeway to do all that?
It was like the best time of my life. We had my boss, I got to give credit to Anthony Ciccone, gave me complete creative freedom. And when I messed up, he would let me know about it. But generally, it was like hands off. I would just have to deliver the segment once a week. There was a time where I had to deliver two segments a week, but I earned his trust where I could do whatever. And there were times when there were a couple of clips that were over the line, let's say, then I would, before they went to air, I would show him and be like, yeah, you got to take that part out. Or he goes, no, that part can stay in. So having that kind of dialogue was important, and having the freedom to fail, because a lot of the segments were just okay. Some of the special ones really connected, but it was, I tried to keep it, make the analogy like a baseball player. Like if you know, baseball players fail 70% of the time. And if you can fail 70% of the time in your career, you're going to the Hall of Fame, because that's how hard the game of baseball is. So I try to keep that in mind, because sometimes when some pieces that you really like didn't find the audience, it would be kind of soul crushing. But then you just got to remember, like, okay, there's another chance next week to hopefully impress somebody watching wherever they're watching. So that's what
and then it was all gone. You went to TSN, and I got it. We keep it a buck over here, man.
Yeah, as you should.
It just was not the same.
Of course.
It felt like they grabbed you just to grab you. It felt like they didn't put anything behind it, because at that point in time, people need to understand how popular, especially because I think what people really recognize you for is your interaction, especially with the hockey players, because hockey players are so square pegged, and Akil's gonna walk into that a little bit more and delve deep into that a little bit more. But you were able to do something very special, so that made it very unique, and people really like Akil said, we looked forward to your show. So you get on TSN, and it's just, you see Cabbie here and there. How was your time there? Like, what would you say about that transition?
It was actually awesome. Okay, so here's the thing. So there were obviously changes that I had to make from my time at the Score and TSN. So the way I dressed, first of all, I had to wear a shirt and tie, which was okay. Because, you know, at the time, I was looking to make a change, because I'd been at the Score.
Grow up.
For so long, yeah, I guess. And I started to feel a little bit complacent. And going to TSN was a big challenge for me, because I had to tone it down a little bit. Not a lot, because they wanted me to still be me, just within the parameters of the TSN universe.
Right.
So one crutch that I leaned on way too much at the Score that I could not use at TSN was always, was like innuendo and like just talking about girls. And I mean, when I'm talking to athletes, like, you know, they like the same things, like sneakers, going out, having a good time, meeting girls, playing their sport, like just simple dude stuff. But that part, I couldn't take that with me. So what I tried to do was write more sketches. Okay. And I put them in air quotes because I didn't really deliver that many. And the ones I did, they weren't, I failed. Like, I don't have like one really great sketch from that time. And that's because of my own shortcomings as a writer. But I did get to do some pretty wild things. So I did get to go run with the bulls in Pamplona, Spain.
Yeah.
I did get to, I got more exposure with NFL players, which I didn't have at the Score. TSN had a relationship with the NFL that the Score did not. So I got to meet Aaron Rodgers. I got to meet JJ Watt. I got to meet Mike Tyson in my time at the Score. I got to meet Michael Jordan again. Sorry, Mike Tyson at TSN. Michael Jordan again at TSN. I got to, you know, I didn't get to cover the Stanley Cup finals like I did at the Score. Like, I, for 2 months I was on the road in 08, mm-hmm. 09, 2010. So Pittsburgh, Detroit, Chicago, Philadelphia, and like go in the dressing room. And like, I had, you know, a couple dudes shave my beard in 2010 when the Blackhawks beat the Flyers. Like, those kind of things were, I always cherish. But I got to go to the ESPYs and host like a red carpet special, which I could mm-hmm. never have done at the Score. So the platform got elevated, but the tone changed. And right. I had less interactions with Kobe in my time at TSN, but I still got to do some pretty special things. I got to develop a relationship with Aaron Rodgers, which I really cherish. And we had a little bit more money for like wilder and crazier props. So mm-hmm. we once made Rodgers like a double holstered, like a belt for like his footballs, made him a Muppet once, I bought like this like Jedi cloak for him. What else do we made like this denim jacket with his name on the back. So Rodgers 12 with like this Canada flag lining. Cause in this one bit, we traded him to Canada for Michael Bublé, Jonathan Taves, Sean Mendes, and a comedian to be named later. And we had the full Sports Center. Like, I sent Kelsey Braid and Kara Wagon. I'm like, okay, you guys are on the desk tonight. Can you do me a favor? Just read these lines. I'm like, sure. So we had this whole Sports Center in, so which made it more legitimate. It just elevated the bit a little bit more. So it was, there were some trade-offs, but yeah. I still cherish the time at TSN like I did. I suppose a little bit less than the Score, because the Score is where I started, and that I was working with Tim and Sid and Verk, and my man D was with me at the Score and at TSN. So having my longtime collaborator just made the transition a lot easier. We did some fun things. Maybe not as memorable, but we still did some fun things at TSN. Gotcha.
When you left TSN, I'll speak for myself, but I'm sure a lot of people felt this way. I was devastated seeing you leave like that.
Thanks.
Wow. How hard of a decision was that for you to leave?
It was tough. It was, thank you for asking. I was, I think at the time I was also maybe a little bit, what's the word I'm looking for? I started to get a little too comfortable, and then Bleacher Report came along, and Bleacher Report's a brand that I've been professionally envious of for years. Dave and I were just messaging a few days ago, and they like the brand is like so fast to respond to moments in the culture, like sporting performances or just moments where they can have a graphics guy create a cartoon based on some moment that just happened, or be able to create a meme. I think they had the one that we were referring to was it's round two, it's Houston Rockets versus LA Lakers. And they put like they made Anthony Davis one of the Monstars and PJ Tucker one of the tiny characters from Space Jam, like that before the series started. And we saw this, like, this is the exact stuff that Bleacher Report's been doing for like 10 years, or not 10 years, maybe like 5 years, that we're like, oh, this stuff is amazing. And the kind of content that we just completely absorb. So when the opportunity came around, I was like, yo, I love this company. I would love to go work with them. So it was tough to go, but I was so excited about starting something new. And I was going into betting. Like, I'm a novice bettor. I've been there for a year, and I'm still learning so much about it. So that part was also a huge learning curve because I didn't know anything. I mean, we have ProLine in Canada, but in the United States, there are like 50 different betting platforms. Mm-hmm. And football and college basketball and the NBA are so huge in the US. And coming from a country which it's hockey and then everything else in the United States, it's football, basketball, baseball, Tiger Woods, so I was going to say soccer, maybe Serena, then soccer, and then everything else. So it was like, it was a flip as far as the sports that get the most attention, but just the company was really what lured me there. Cause I want to work with, I've been so envious and I respect Bleacher Report so much. So jumping on that on board there, I was like, I'm in.
You know, when Kobe passed away,
yeah,
I was on my way back. I was on my way back to Toronto.
From?
I was at the airport in St. Louis. I was coming back from the NHL All-Star Weekend.
All-Star Weekend, of course. Yeah.
I was on such a high. It was great. Xavier Woods joined us from the WWE. I hooked up with Joel Ward. It was just a great weekend. You've been to All-Star Weekends. You know how much fun that thing is. So I'm in the airport. Right beside me, this girl was talking to her friend. She said, you know, oh my God, Kobe Bryant just died. I turned, I said, don't say that. Like, you know what I mean? I was upset with her. I was like, don't, that's not funny. And then she just showed me her phone and I started looking at my phone. I started walking around. So everybody, everywhere you're going, everybody's talking about it. We're seeing all the news and stuff like that. I was never really a huge Kobe Bryant fan. I always respected the Mamba, but I remember feeling, I thought, you know, my first thought was, oh my God, that's a huge loss. But you know what my second thought was? I thought, oh my God, Cabby. Because I knew how much your relationship was. I knew A, how hard it was for you to get those times with him. And then when you had it, the chemistry you guys had, the playing you guys had, the you know, Mamba, and here's this ultra fan, and oh my God, get away from me. And this big, you know, it was just classic television. And I'm sitting there in the airport and I'm thinking of you, brother. It was just the weirdest thing. I thought, oh my God, I hope Cabby's okay. So I'm wondering if you don't mind taking our audience back through your relationship with one of the greats, the Black Mamba, and, you know, about when you heard the news and that those the next couple of days going forward and how you felt and how you're doing about that news to this day.
I was gutted like everybody else, just in shock. I the only other athlete that affected me where I was like that emotional was when I heard that Walter Payton died. And my dad was a fan of Walter Payton, who was the legendary Chicago Bears running back, but I didn't know him. I just saw him, you know, in these like clips, but Kobe had an actual relationship with. So I was gutted. I was just devastated. And, I was like trying to compose myself when people were asking me about it. And I did some interviews and I just broke down. It was just such a flood of emotion. And you never know when it hits you because you just don't know when it's going to come, but it would hit at random times. And I felt like, obviously I've just felt so sad for Vanessa and her family. And it was really tough, man. It was, you know, we were just exchanging messages over the holidays, just like, just, you know, hope the fam's awesome, you know, Happy New Year, you know, Merry Christmas, that kind of stuff. And the last time I was talking to him, I was talking to him about a friend of mine who lives in Calgary, this guy, Eddie Richardson, who coaches a travel basketball team, girls and boys, but his girls team was playing in a tournament against Gigi, and Kobe just had really wonderful things to say about Eddie. And that was like the last time. And that was in December or January, maybe early January. And so I told Eddie, they actually showed him like the screenshots and it was, yeah, I don't know. It was, so to get to Kobe, when I was working on NBAXL, which was a magazine show, a half hour magazine show from 02 to 05, that's when I worked on it. We would send requests all the time to the Lakers, to John Black, to try to get some time with Kobe Bryant. It was either no response via email or just a flat out no. So I remember seeing him in 2004 at the All-Star Game in LA, just in passing. I was like, whoa, that's Kobe Bryant. But then to talk to him for the first time was when I was at the Score and Dave and I went to a morning shoot around, Lakers, Raptors, and the night before, the Leafs had like an overtime game. There was a snowstorm in Toronto, so there was like no media at the Air Canada Center. So I'm like, all right, boom. As soon as practice is over, I'm like, all right, media can come in. Then I just nervously just went, boom, right to Kobe. He was wearing like a giant navy blue parka. Didn't really seem like he was in that great of a mood. But then I started my question. I did a thing about bandwagon fans and what did he feel? How did he feel about bandwagon fans? And then I asked him to draw a bandwagon. He's like, I suck at drawing. I'm like, no, you don't, because in 15 years, you're going to win an Oscar for a drawing, Kobe. But unfortunately, I didn't have that piece of information in my brain at the time. But he didn't draw the bandwagon. And then just as a throwaway line at the end, I was like, hey, I have like money for a taxi, but the budget's kind of thin. Can I just stay at your house the next time I'm in LA? And he said, you want to stay at the guest house? So he started smiling. He started smiling about him, you know, when he was asked to draw the bandwagon. But I know that I got through to him when I asked [S2] Right. [S1] Him about staying at his house. And then, so that was at like noon. So then he said, sure, you can come stay at the guest house. And then at 5:30, so 90 minutes before the game, you can also speak to basketball players. So then I went back and I was asking like posters in his room and stuff. And then I was like, hey, what's your address? He's like, you want my address? As he's leaving the locker room, it's like, it's 8 Out of Your Mind Avenue. Boom. Left the locker room, goes to the court, drops 45 points that night. Boom. And then I saw him again. So I think he recognized, so also huge assist by Jim LaBombard, who is the Raptors director of media, who when asked by Allison Bogley of the Los Angeles Lakers, who is this reporter bugging my players? Like, why is he asking to stay at Kobe's house? Jim LaBombard was like, oh, he's a local guy. He's harmless. It's okay. I don't know exactly what he said, but he vouched for me. Cause then Allison mm-hmm. told me later, it's like, it's because LaBombard vouched for you that I allowed you in the, in the locker room to bug Kobe. Wow. So, that's how it started. And then like every year I'd fly to LA and he would give me 10 minutes and then I'd try to make a meal out of it, ask him to stay at his house, bring props, pillows, CDs, pajamas. I brought him a key to my house once. It was always, and then Kobe didn't really let me get too close, but I would always like either like move my chair closer to his, or I try to hug him. All these things that nobody would ever dream of doing with Kobe, that's what I did. And then the audience got to experience him differently. And I was so happy about that. I was happy enough that he trusted me to like not ask him something flagrant or something foolish. I mean, they were foolish, but not flagrant. So he let his guard down. And then the audience got to see some cool moments.
So I think you might have answered my question just because, you know, you asked for his address and he said a number and said like Out of Your Mind or whatever. But I was watching the video and he was listing off like a phone number and then he ended in, don't ever call me. So I'm going to guess you're asking for his phone number and that's just something that he replied with.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a 1-800 never, ever call me ever. And he continued, he like in multiple, you know, I need to do like a super cut. Cause I have some interviews that have only aired once or like a few times that people wouldn't remember, or like clips inside of other interviews with Kobe that people have never seen. But yeah, he would hit me with that number a few times. And then I would always just, I always had to continue that thread. So there was always like two levels to the conversation. Like one, I would ask him whatever the topic of that interview was. And then two was always can I be your friend? Mm-hmm. And can I be your friend in various ways, sleepover, come to your house, video games, whatever, whatever. And it was always a no, always a no.
Well, it's some of the best moments. And, you know, I was actually looking at, I was actually kind of surprised I didn't see like a Cabby special on your relationship. I feel like you guys had enough material, even if it was on YouTube or something like that. But yeah, man, that honestly, I just remember being in the airport just feeling bad for you, man. And I'm just glad that you had the opportunity to do that. Because I believe one time I was at your house, I feel like he signed a shoe for you.
Yes, he did. Yes. Yeah, that was Dion Phaneuf asked me to get a signed sneaker for him.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, no problem, man. So I went to LA and was a segment. I took Mike Richards to the game. We watched Kobe drop 38 points against Steve Nash and the Phoenix Suns. After the game, he signed the sneaker, gave it to me. So I brought it back to Toronto for Phaneuf. And I was like, yo, just come by the house and pick it up. And he never came by the house. I was like, bro, like, come get your, I got him. And I don't know if once he asked me to bring them to the rink, I was like, I'm not bringing them to the rink. You're coming by the house to pick them up. He never did. So like those sneakers are now mine. They belong to me. And they're crazy. My prized possession. I've gotten a few things signed, like just like a handful of few jerseys here and there and that sort of thing. But that is my prized possession.
Well, this is a hockey related podcast. So we got to talk a little bit of hockey. You know, your style is animated, as we talked about. You get right into guys' faces. You get really silly. We know that NHL hockey players are very hard to crack a smile, as we've talked about that. Were you nervous about your style dealing with hockey players, considering going into these locker rooms, you'd be the only black guy there, and you're the only black guy there that is going over the top? And how were you embraced by the hockey community?
It wasn't at the front of my mind, but I got more comfortable. So a couple of guys on the Leafs made exceptions for me. So Darcy Tucker and Brian McCabe. This is going back quite a ways. And also shout out to Wade Belak. God rest his soul.
Yes, yes.
Those guys hated or disliked interacting with the regular media. And when I came in the room, I'd ask Pat Park, like, hey, can you ask Tucker if you give me a few minutes? And Tucker would come out and McCabe would come out. And even Sundin never came out, but they just knew it was going to be a break from the, you know, from either being asked cliched questions or having to give cliched answers. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what the first real breakthrough was for me. I think, you know, what helped was like when hockey player, when their friends would text them and say, yo, I saw you on like Cabbie's interview, that validated me. So when I was covering the 2008 Stanley Cup finals with Detroit and Pittsburgh, you know, Detroit, obviously an American market, but a lot of guys were Canadians. Some of the Swedish dudes, they would just have no idea who I was. But I was so extra that I think they enjoyed themselves, but they just knew like it was just going to be so weird. But getting validated from the guys back in their hometowns, like the Canadian dudes who would see the stuff on the score, that was big for me. And that definitely helped. That definitely, but I always knew, look, man, we grew up in Canada, so we're never going to be in the majority of anything unless we're at, Caravana or Kennedy Station.
Yeah.
Or, you know, there's like three places in Toronto where we're like in the majority.
Scarborough Town Center? STC?
Scarborough Town Center,
Town Center. Certainly working in hockey, yeah, I just knew that I was going to be the only one. But, I, you know, again, you're such a limited amount of time in that room, mm-hmm. 30 minutes max. And then sometimes some players will only speak once, and that's to a scrum of reporters. And I would just sort of camp out, wait till the scrum was done so everybody else can get – they're on deadline so they can get their actual legitimate stuff. And then I'd be like, yo, man, you can just – and I would just kind of slide in. And then people would get mad because I'm getting a one-on-one. But I'm like, yo, you had your time to ask some questions, and this has nothing to do with the game. It has everything to do with the player and what they're – and their personality. So that helped too. That was my strategy.
You ever ask players questions and you just don't get any reaction?
Yeah. Chris Drury was a guy who hated it. Jágr didn't like it. You know, it was hard to crack. Nice guy, but just was who was drafted by the Ducks number 2 overall in like 93 or 94? Kwamster. And he was knocked out in like game 6. He woke up and then he scored the game winner against the the Devils in
Paul Kariya.
Yes, Kariya. Stevenson put him out to lunch.
Scott Stevens, yeah.
Scott Stevens, yes.
Across the blue line, lowered the shoulder. Yeah.
Whammy.
But it's been a while since somebody totally was just not having a good time. I'm trying to think of some in the like the last 3 or 4 years who was like
they all know you now. It's like they know what to expect, right?
Some, but like some young guys who I've never seen my stuff. But the older dudes, yeah, they enjoyed it. I'm trying to think. I know there's one. Hold on. Sean Monahan. And he's got, there's a Twitter account called Boring Sean Monahan, which I was unaware of before I interviewed him for a podcast. It's him and Tom Wilson. Okay. And the mistake was, it was at 8 o'clock in the morning. So it's like, these guys are up before they go skating. It's like, no one wants to do an interview that early. But so the fact that it was early, plus he's not that animated of a dude, made mm-hmm. it even harder to like get stuff out of him. And I think eventually he smiled, or maybe he chuckled, but that was a tough one. Tom Wilson is awesome, but Sean Monahan. And that was, I think, last year. That was a really tough one. Nice guy.
He's making those Brampton guys look bad.
I did ask him about Brampton. I was like, yo, what like Nav, Tory Lanez, Alicia Cara, and then a bunch of NBA dudes, Tristan Thompson, and then Corey Joseph from Brampton. Like, what is it about Brampton? And he's like, yeah, I don't know. It's like, all right, cool. Yeah, man. All right, let's go on to the next
question. So, Cabby, is that stuff kind of frustrating for you? And do you think, like, as a sport, it's getting better, like, you know, compared to back in the days?
Is it frustrating? No, it just makes me want to work harder. So I will try to compensate for their – if their energy is low, I'm going to get even higher and more animated. I'm going to work with the space in the room. You know, I mean, I always hope that someone's in a great mood on that day, because sometimes they're not. They could be in a disagreement with their lady, or have a issue with the coach, or a nagging injury, or just don't really feel up to it. And I had to remember early, like, don't take it so personally, because there could be a number of reasons that someone is just either grouchy or cranky that day. Is it getting better? I think guys are more aware of their social media presence and their brands, for lack of a better term. It's just the hockey culture just suppresses the personality so much. So that's why, that's part of the reason why the game isn't growing at a 2X or 3X level. Like, once the game, really what hockey needs is a bunch of Latin kids and a bunch of Black kids to come into the sport and like, or have access to the sport, and then come through the pipeline and then have a chance to become stars. Yeah. Because the way it's presently constructed, it's at the max. Like, it's at its height in the old school hockey way, which is like, I don't know, 9th on the depth chart of popular sports in America. And it really needs to flourish in America, because that's the biggest economy and the biggest market, sports market in the world for sports not named soccer or European football. So that's where it needs to change. And certainly it needs to elevate its stars more. As I mean, it's always compared to the NBA, and the NBA is an entertainment product, also a sport. But David Stern knew a long time ago, he's like, I need to create a star system, much like Hollywood, because people are coming to see the movies because of the person's name at the top of the poster, not necessarily the name of the movie. It's who's on the top of the poster. And that's what, and here we are.
Right. But I would say, you know, you made the point of, so, you know, the hockey needs these Black and Hispanic kids to come in there and just really shine. And we're seeing a lot more young Black athletes getting a lot of play in the league, you know, starting out. I've always said that in the next couple of years, you're going to see a lot more. But the one thing I will say, it's on those young Black and Hispanic kids or kids of color that come in the league to bring their own flavor. Because you can still be Black or Hispanic and have no flavor. And you just come in there and you have that hockey culture. Because I still think, and you made that point, hockey culture subdues that. So even as a Black young player, you can still be, you can't just be conveniently Black. And just because you're Black don't mean you got flavor. You come in there, if you ain't got no flavor, you ain't got no flavor. And it's not going to attract the Black and Hispanic fans of the United States. Because the Black and Black and Hispanic fans of the United States of sports want to see somebody that looks like them, but also somebody that looks like them and they can relate to. Would you agree with that?
I don't know, but well, flavor, that's subjective. I mean, if a player came in and scored 60 goals like Corey Perry and wins a Hart Trophy in 2011, like that kid's going to be a star. Corey Perry, zero flavor, but likely will go to the Hall of Fame.
Right.
You know, our era is like Mike Gardner scored 600 goals. Uh-huh. He was really fast, but did he have flavor? No.
Well, we're talking about minority players. That's a whole different ball game, though.
Right, but just the fact that being represented in the league will mm-hmm. open a lot of door or open the opportunities for other people that look like them.
Okay, so now with that, would you say though that those players, like, see, I agree with you, but I feel like it's a lot more than that. Like, they have to be seen in the Black communities. They have to be seen in the Hispanic.
But Bakram, sir, mm-hmm. If there's one Black hockey player who 1 year scores 50 goals, the community's going to support that. We have never not supported.
Jerome?
What do you mean? We support.
I mean, I'm saying, like, Jerome never really brought in the Black community, especially in the United States. Now, I know he played on the Canadian team.
In Calgary.
Right, but he also played in Boston. He also played
when he was 38 and he played in Colorado. Okay. But at the height of his powers, when he scored 52 goals in 2002 mm-hmm. or 2003, and then is in the Stanley Cup Final in 2004, mm-hmm. if he played for Detroit or New York or Philadelphia or St. Louis or Chicago, then yeah, he's going to be elevated. Yo, Jerome even did a BET. He did like a BET, like a half hour special on BET.
Right.
Where he was,
I do remember that. I do remember.
Right.
And I do agree with you. I do agree with you.
We will support our own, bro. How many times has Kanye disappointed us? But we're still like, when Kanye decides to come home, we're going to embrace it. Like, right. When you come on home, you know that we're there for you. And I know that's a far out of left field example, mm-hmm. but your counterpoint to Jerome Iginla is a good one. But in this era of social media and the way that we exchange information and exchange content, like, that person, if they have a season like Iginla's, he will be in. And also, like, it's time for hockey to get some women involved too in coaching and on the executive level. Like, we see in, I know this is a hockey podcast, so I don't want to compare it to other sports, but there needs to be.
Please do.
No, there just needs to be a pipeline created, because you know there are brilliant women in hockey who've coached teams, who built programs that have won on the international stage. Like, I know we have very few people of color in the league, and then we've, like, I think there are zero female executives, and that definitely needs to change.
Well, you know what? We walked away from this a little bit, but you talked about your access in the locker rooms with these players.
Right.
I've heard a lot of guys aren't too fond of Cabbie. Is it true?
Yes.
True or false?
Yes, absolutely.
Is it true that Brandon Shanahan was not a fan of what you were doing with the Maple Leafs in the locker room?
Correct. That is absolutely correct. So my access to Matthews and Marner was zero. I got to interview Marner when he was playing for Team Canada, much like Akil did. He didn't score an iconic goal like Akil did, but Marner's still, shout out to you, Akil, Marner's still super talented. But yeah, that prevented me from getting, so I would lean on my relationship with JVR, Nazem Kadri, Morgan Riley, because I had established relationships with those guys, and we would hang out outside of the rink. And then I wrote this bit. We did this tournament, like a March Madness type of tournament with Serial, and we didn't tell the Leafs that we were doing it. We shot it at JVR's condo. So it was Matthews, Marner, JVR, and Morgan Riley. And we got in so much trouble for it because we didn't tell them. We prefer to go on the beg for forgiveness, don't ask permission sort of edict. And I've never been able to interview Matthews. I mean, I think this is year four for him in the league. And yeah, so Shanahan, not a fan. And when I asked the PR dude, I was like, is it in part because he doesn't like my style? He's like, yeah, in part because he doesn't like you or your style. So that's just one of the consequences. I've had great access and then limited access, but that's how it goes.
Yeah.
Well, tell Shanahan, lighten up.
I will.
Yeah. So how did you get into Bleacher Report? Not how did you get into it, but how are you enjoying working for Bleacher right now? And what are you currently doing with them?
So I got on their radar because, you know, every year, Kwame, you probably did this too. Just you cut demo reels and you send it to your friends and like, hey, check out some of my work. And then I had a friend that worked at CNN, and then she got in touch with this with a talent executive, and she really liked my interviews with Aaron Rodgers and some of my Kobe stuff. So then the opportunity presented itself last summer. So what I'm working on now is I'm working on the betting portfolio. So Bleacher Report Betting is the portfolio brand that I'm at. So Bleacher Report, there's Kicks, there's BR Hoops, there's BR Gridiron, which is NFL football, there's BR Football, which is European soccer. And we're trying to build this portfolio of like betting, and it's tricky because in the US there's only 17 states that have legalized sports betting. The community's small, but it's growing, and we're trying to attract casual bettors. And like fantasy sports is like a cousin of betting. They're like kind of related. Fantasy sports are largely free, but betting is just like, it's just a couple, like one door down the hall. So we're hosting, you know, we have right now we have a show called Group Chat, which is like four degenerates in me who are talking about like right now talking about like NBA basketball, a little bit of baseball. And then we have a show called Squad Ride where we're talking about NFL football that starts. I mean, NFL starts in under a week. So there's a Thursday night game between the Kansas City Chiefs and the Houston Texans. Okay. And then, you know, boom, week one, Sunday, everybody gets fat. Everybody gains 14 pounds eating chili, chips, burgers, nachos for 12 straight hours, being absolute gluttons. I will be one of them. And then spending a lot of money on countless wagers. So that's how smart.
Sorry. How smart would I be to go with your picks?
Ooh, I don't publish my picks because I don't have any confidence in them. Also, so you would not be smart at all. I'm like, if this summer I've made 100 wagers, I'm probably at about 22%. So I would be getting cut from a baseball team very soon. And for like people that are considered sharps, who are like experts, if they can win 57% of their bets, that is like, you are one of the best in the world. It is friggin' hard. And 57% is like one of two basically, but yeah. It's difficult, man.
Do you ever take a lot of slack, or anybody on your team take slack for wrong picks?
Yeah. So our betting expert, her name is Kelly Stewart, and she's like the most informed. So sometimes she'll like share some picks in the group chat, and when they don't hit, we're just like, fade Kelly. Like we give it to her. Like she gets a lot of flack from the boys because she's an expert, and like, it's hard to do, but we'll still give her some grief for picks that don't come through.
So Kelly, we were messaging back and forth a little bit a few weeks ago.
I didn't even know you were on, like you are part of this podcast. And we were like, I had no idea that you and Laquamster and Elijah had a podcast like together. Yeah. We were messaging like a month, 3 weeks ago.
Yeah. A few weeks ago, but you're saying that there's more opportunities in the States where you're at now. What will you miss the most about living in Toronto?
What do I miss the most about living in Toronto? I miss some of the creature comforts, like some of the restaurants that I used to love going to. I miss being able to go to what is now Scotiabank Arena to go to a Raptors game, or I'll go to the occasional Leafs game. But I miss like seeing some of the guys out. You know, I think we mentioned, I don't know if we mentioned before we started, but you and I last saw each other in Marble, which is the spot on King Street West. And shout out to Peter Gurgis. Like I like go, what, there's a random time. Hold on. I was there during the final. So Raptors, Warriors, game five was in Toronto.
Yep.
This is the game, at the end of the game, Kyle Lowry, I'm sorry to bring this basketball, but it has a hockey tie to it.
It's all good.
Kyle Lowry in the corner, shoots. Draymond Green gets a fingernail on the ball, alters the shot. Raptors lose. Game six is in Oakland. That night, after I do my post-game hits, I go to Marble. There are like 40 NHL dudes at Marble. I'm like, what's going on here? Giroux, I saw Jamie Benn was there. I was like, bro, what are you – like, why are you here? He goes, I came for the Raptors game. I'm like, what? Like, you live in BC and you play in Dallas. You flew to Toronto? He's like, yeah. There was – who else was there? Stamkos was there. There were – it felt like – is there like a BioSteel thing happening? Or like, what is going on? But there was like 40 dudes. And I don't even know – I don't even think it was somebody's birthday. It was just – all these dudes were in town. Oh, you know what it was? It was the player meetings. That's what it was. Okay. NHL player meetings for a couple of days. And then a bunch of dudes went to the Raptors game because it was the finals and it was the most exciting time in the city since the Jays.
So I remember seeing you, and I remember like obviously I knew who you were and stuff, but you came up to me and I didn't expect that to happen. So like, I'm not going to lie, I felt pretty cool. You coming up to me and introducing yourself. I thought,
look, Akil, I'd only seen you on TV and I'd only seen you in your Kings jersey. So your Kings sweater. So I wonder, I had to come introduce myself.
Well, no, the first time I introduced you to Akil. Again.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Yeah, but he was a Ute, and Akil owes me some money. Luke Robitaille, they all owe me some money, because if you remember, Cabby, when we were at that screening, you hosted the screening for my film, and I said that young man right there is going to play in the NHL, and I think a lot of people were like, "Oh, that's cute, Kwame," but
no, I think they would believe you, and you weren't wrong. You were absolutely right. But thank you. Yes, sorry, Kwam, sir. You did introduce us the original time. I think we had more of a conversation at Marble versus at your screening, because there were so many people at the screening and everybody was like...
Yeah, so back to my question.
Right, yeah.
Where are your favorite places to go in Toronto?
Favorite places in this... My favorite restaurant is a place called Little Sister. It's an Indonesian spot. Like it's under the radar at right in Midtown, Young and Davisville. But there are a couple of sushi spots that I like to hit, like on John and Queen. It's just called Sushi Time. It's like a simple little place, but I love it. You know, and there's like, I always go look at sneakers at, the place on Queen and Augusta, SVP. And then on Spadina in Richmond, I'm forgetting these names. You got to go downstairs. There's A Life and the one right next to it. Oh, I can't remember the name of the. But there's like a couple of those sneaker shops that I like. I moved uptown in 2017, so I used to live like at King West. So King West in the summertime, like you can't beat it, just because there's just so much energy. And randomly, once a month the bars are open till 4 a.m. For no reason, on a random May long weekend, or in like April, there's no holiday in April, but like why would? Oh, and I guess Easter, but
this is Toronto.
I know, but even March, March, there's no holiday in March, but for some reason, some weekend in March, it's extended license open until 4. Like some of that stuff I miss living in Las Vegas, but that's all right. I had a lot of fun when I was in the city.
Please tell me you know what Johnny Burgers is though.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Everybody knows Johnny.
Shepherd and VP, right? Yeah. Or is it Mark?
My block.
Yeah, okay.
Where, you remember where Universal Studios was? Remember Universal Records was over there? Right around there?
You know, I never went to that office. No? I wasn't in the music game like you, Kwamster. I was aware of it. I shout out to Big Ives.
Yes, Big Ives. There you go.
Hardy is an executive. I think he's head of A&R or something at Universal, but I never got to go up.
Hopefully they'll sign somebody.
Yes.
I got a lightning round for you. Round of your favorites. Okay, so you ready for it?
Yes.
Favorite rapper you've interviewed?
Drake.
Favorite R&B singer you've interviewed?
I haven't interviewed an R&B singer.
No.
I guess Drake then. I'll go Kendrick and for hip hop, and then I'll go Drake for R&B.
Okay. Favorite hockey player you've interviewed?
It's a tie between Mike Richards and Ryan Getz.
Sean Monahan.
Monahan's got some work to do, but he can make the top 10 at some point.
This one is easy. Favorite basketball player you've ever interviewed?
My favorite basketball player is the legendary Kobe Bean Bryant.
Mm-hmm. Favorite female athlete you've interviewed?
You know, in truth, I have not interviewed very many female athletes, but I'm going to say either Ashley Lawrence on Team Canada Soccer or Khadija Buchanan, because you got to work hard to get Khadija's respect. So Khadija was a lot of fun. I interviewed those ladies when they were in England at a training camp.
I think you would kill it with the Williams sisters. I think they would love
Serena, bro. It is like very difficult to get time with Serena, because Jill Smoller, who was her agent at CAA, is a shark. And Jill is like, has multiple layers to get through to even get to Jill, and you're not getting to Serena before, like you're not getting past Jill for like only GQ, HBO, like these huge media entities can get time with Serena. So it would be an absolute honor to try to make Serena laugh or Venus laugh. But I have never gotten anywhere close to interviewing the Williams sisters.
It's going to be a bum rush. It's going to be a bum rush interview. No. You know what I mean? I think you're just going to
very, very slowly and with a big smile.
Yeah. Cabby, thank you for joining us. But before we let you go, we do this thing with every one of our guests. It's their top five songs. And for you, you're heading to the rink. You're going to interview some NHL guys during Stanley Cup, let's just say, and you're popping in some music. What are the top five songs that you'll be listening to get you hyped up for an interview workday?
To get hyped. Okay. Hyped. All right. I got to put some Hov in there. So Hov, it's going to be, track five on Watch the Throne. What you need? I got what you need. What's up? Where my money at? It's after Otis. Gotta have it. Gotta have it. I might throw on Jadakiss, We Gonna Make It. That love gets it. Me hype. The Diplomats, I Really Mean It.
Stop right there for a second. I want Elijah and Akil to understand Cabby's from my generation, so he's giving you flavor right now. So continue, my friend.
Okay, so then I got to put some Drizzy in there. So probably Headlines.
Okay.
Or Lord Knows. Probably Headlines. And then something more recent. What am I crushing right now? Or maybe I'll replace Headlines for Laugh Now, Cry Later by Drake and Lil Durk. And then just because Beyonce's verse is just like, it's just so gully, I'll go, I don't know, the song is like 8 months old, but I'll go Savage Remix, Megan Thee Stallion with Queen Bee.
Not gonna lie, I have a couple of your playlists that you post on Instagram screenshot on my phone. So I gotta go.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I'm a fan of what I just heard. It's a lot better than majority of our guests.
P.O. Joseph.
He is by far the worst.
P.O. Joseph is the worst.
Was P.O. terrible?
Yeah, he's just horrible. P.O. plays for Pittsburgh. He's young cat. He's on Pittsburgh. His playlist is just bad. But he can actually sing. He's got a little, like, I think if you, he can sing, man. He can sing better than you two.
He can play hockey. And that's about it.
You got to get him on a karaoke night and just put that to the test.
Yeah. Well, listen, Cabby, man, like I said, we've known each other for a very long time. And every time I've ever reached out to you to do something, if it's not fly from Toronto to come to Edmonton to, you know, hang out and host a party for me, or if it wasn't hosting the premiere of my film, whatever it is, you've always been there for me. You've always had my back, man. I love you. I miss you. Toronto misses you, man. And I'm just glad you were able to come rock with us, brother. Thank you so much.
I appreciate the invitation, and I look forward to hugging each one of you guys uncomfortably for 18 to 20 seconds.
That's what it is, my man. That's what it is.
Real talk.
Oh, you know what? Before we let you go, Cabby, for anybody who wants to find you online, where can they look you up?
On Twitter, my handle is just @Cabby, C-A-B-B-I-E. And on Instagram, it's The Real Cabby. Most of my content's there. Most of my thoughts are there. So if you feel inclined, you know, give it a little read. If you like it, give it a follow or a couple double taps.
Word.
And when we make it, we gon' put our soul on ice. 'Cause when they doubted us, we did it twice. I guess the poop is in the freezer. They tried to get rid of us, but they need us. So I need you, like you need me. I need you, like you need me. We double up when our numbers come through the TV. Yeah, soul on ice, I'ma put my soul on ice. Nice. You goddamn right, I'm screaming on that beat. I got a match screaming on the streets. We in the club, stadium, and the arena, cousin. Put me on ice and I'm hitting that top. Trees are dusting, fussing, fighting with myself is enticing. My enemies in the mirror, and he's always reciting the poetry.
tree of my power. Statistic of my weakness. Shadow boxing with Tyson. I'm trying to show y'all I'm beating them to the punch. Competition on the table. It's time for lunch. Though my mission is unstable, I'm scoring once, twice, three times, and I'm taking hats. Men lie, women lie. Progress is based upon the facts. So let that baby shine. They sold a show and older. They live within the grind. Now take them out that stroller, cause coming up is a champ. Prediction of Ali. He changed his name to Muhammad. We changing free to a fee. It's up to me. And when we make it, we gon' put our soul on ice. Cause when they doubted us, we did it twice. I guess the poop is in the freezer. They tried to get rid of us, but they need us. So I need you, like you need me. I need you, like you need me. We double up when our numbers come through the TV. Soul on ice, I'ma put my soul on ice. Nice. Let's dedicate this one to Jade and Linda. Let's escalate to Caddy, crush the Pinto. Or maybe you prefer that Benz. Why that big truck? I don't give a f. Only really want a house where they get fired. Let's take it far down on the competition. Competition is nonsense. It's me and my soul's decision. Yeah, I only work against myself. I play against you to bench you. I'm throwing all shots to the shelf. Yeah, the top is the topic. You checking your armor. My wheel telescopic, so I'm steering my karma. The future is mine, like receiving the past from Jesus or Jordan or Crosby, Stills and Nash. Young, and when we make it, we gon' put our soul on ice. Cause when they doubted us, we did it twice. I guess the proof is in the freezer. They tried to get rid of us, but they need us. So I need you, like you need me. I need you, like you need me. We double up when our numbers come through the TV. Soul on ice, I'ma put my soul on ice. Nice.